Welcome to the Between the Zeros and Ones, where leadership meets technology. I'm your host, Anthony Piccolo, and I'm passionate about helping organizations align their teams, drive accountability, and create meaningful impact through data-driven decision-making. As the founder of Performance Scoring, I work with businesses and leaders to integrate technology that enhance how they lead, collaborate, and execute. And I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Dr. Chichi Anyanwu. Dr. Chichi is an expert in leadership science and organizational behavior, bringing a wealth of knowledge on how great leaders inspire, develop, and empower their teams. She's passionate about bridging the gap between leadership theory and real-world application. Dr. Chichi, love to hear from you.
Hello, everybody. As Anthony said, my name is Chichi. I am the owner of New Breath Consulting and Coaching. And we are all about helping leaders help themselves and help others. We have all heard that people don't leave organizations, they leave people. So let's make sure a little less of that happens.
I love it. Well, so on this podcast, we're going to dive into real conversations with real leaders who are shaping the future of business, exploring how they leverage leadership strategies and technology to make smarter decisions. And today we're thrilled to have the CEO of Service Specialist, Mr. Brad Curtis, and his sub-companies, Emergency Plumbing Service, among others, with us to share his journey and insights in leadership. So, Brad, it's so great to have you, and let's jump in here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Anthony and Chichi. Exciting to be part of it.
Yeah, great, great. Well, hey, Brad, just to set the table, just maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in a CEO role, maybe with Service Specialists, anything else that might set the table for our conversation.
Sure, yeah. So I've definitely started young in entrepreneurship right out of college, you know, not knowing a clue about leadership or how this was all going to look. But the benefit of that has been that, you know, I've had, you know, 30 plus years of like just learning by doing it and failing. So it's been a cool experience to grow and to understand, just the people aspect of business. been operating my own business or businesses, you know, like I said, since my early 20s. And currently involved with a business that does service for commercial properties, everything from restaurants to retail, and we provide services that include plumbing repair and maintenance, electrical, HVAC, kitchen equipment and appliances. So kind of do a little bit of everything for the commercial side of the industry. And with that comes a lot of people and managing people and processes. So my background is really just learning by doing and getting to look back over my shoulder and see the ways I've screwed it up and how to make that better next time.
I love it.
Having said that, and I like what you said, you've learned through the fire, right? You've learned by doing. What is leadership to you today?
I think grown is probably the best word, but grown and learned through trial and error, like I said, to come to a point now where I define leadership and I like firmly am planted on this, just through my own experiences, that a true leader, is a servant leader, that a leader is most effective in doing the things that those he leads most need when he or she is doing it, from a servant perspective, as opposed to, you know, being over the top of everyone and looking down. We even in my organizations, we even talk about as management and as leaders, the organizational pyramid is not the typical pyramid shape where the point is on the top, but we flip it upside down, and the leadership is the bottom of the pyramid, and each level of leadership is essentially kind of holding up the level of people above them, and supporting them and serving them. And the better we are at serving the people that we lead, the better they'll be at serving the people that they serve. And then eventually that, right, goes all the way up to the customer.
How's that evolved, Brad? Like, I mean, you know, you've identified your style, and it's obviously impactful. You've seen your business grow. You've seen great people come and stay with you. Have you seen it evolve, your style, or where it is today? Where did it come from, maybe?
I've definitely, my style has evolved. In my style has evolved. I mean, there's certainly a part of it that's understanding, like, your own, you know, being introspective and understanding where you're strong and where you're weak, and playing off of the strengths. But honestly, even that I don't think is what gets me to where I am today, because I'm certainly weak in areas that I have to, you know, I have to operate in. But I think ultimately it evolved just by understanding what worked, you know, and understanding what got buy-in, you know. So eventually, like, am I running a police state where I'm trying to catch everyone doing something wrong and then, you know, ticket them or fine them or, you know, some sort of disciplinary action and to get them back on track? Or am I leading in a way where people around me actually have buy-in? You know, the culture exists where everybody sees the proper direction to the end result, and then they just need, you know, they need leadership to help continue to guide them and keep them on track.
Yeah.
See, that style is often considered soft.
Sure.
The whole idea of flipping the pyramid.
Sure.
So how have you brought your other leaders along? You are a servant leader. That doesn't mean everybody else in your organization is. So when you flip this pyramid or the org chart, how has it been working? What challenges are you facing with it?
I think honestly, Chi-Chi, it hasn't been hard, because I think when people that I've introduced to it, or when I've brought managers in and trained them, I think it's very quick for them to see how it's quick for them to see how well it works, for them to see the results, right? For them to see the return on their efforts. And so I don't know that it takes a lot of salesmanship on my part. It kind of sells itself once it begins, you know, once they begin that process and they, you know, they follow kind of the steps that they're given. So I would say, and certainly there's, I think more so than the leadership team I have, because, right, you kind of carefully select those people, right? And so I'm looking for people that I think will have that already. I see that mindset in them, and that sort of, if you will, you know, humility, to be willing to be a servant leader. But I think where I think it's more often noticeable that it's unexpected and maybe even the reaction of like, wow, that's different, is the employees being led, because they so often come from organizations into ours where those organizations lead from a very stern and a very black and, you know, just, you know, more of the dropping the hammer kind of leadership, where they come here and it takes them some time to adjust to, for instance, be vocal, because of previous jobs where if you were vocal and it was against the grain, maybe there was repercussion, there was negative repercussions. So, you know, and so maybe that takes them a while to feel confident and comfortable that the leadership here wants to hear from them. So I think it's, I've had more, probably I've noticed more of that, like sort of eye-opening, you know, to the eye-opening and kind of in awe of the difference of that style of leadership from the people being led than I probably have from the leaders that are in place, if that makes sense.
It does. Go ahead, Anthony.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's funny, obviously, being the performance technology guy here. So we have so many of our customers that have moved from this reports to structure to the mm-hmm. supports to structure, mm-hmm. like you were saying. And Chi-Chi, I'd love for you to interject before I kind of had a follow-up for Brad. So if we're going to stay on the topic, Chi-Chi, please, Dr. Chi-Chi, please.
No, I was going to ask, yes, many times the question, you there's a few things that you've brought up that is significant in making this work. One is understanding of yourself.
Yes.
And your triggers. What you're strong at, what you're not strong at. Second right. one is careful selection of who you make your leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then that you mentioned that it's not really been the leaders, it's the people. And adjusting to this openness. So that leads to building trust.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you give somebody else mulling over doing this, thinking of stepping into this style of leadership or flipping?
Better question I had, Chi-Chi.
It's a big question. What advice would I give? I think the first thing you brought up, Chi-Chi, was that like understanding your own, like understanding who you are as a leader individually, right? Because I think the piece of advice I would give to just the random, you know, the random business leader or manager or owner operator is probably that you have to trust, you know, you have to trust the system. You have to trust this servant or shepherd leadership and step into it and then allow the results to prove to be the proof that it works. Because I do think so many people are predisposed to, as you said, like leadership that way is soft and soft leadership will fail. So I think the advice would be, hey, trust it. You know, it may not be what you were taught or where you came from when you were being led. And then secondly, I think the piece of advice for just someone who maybe was more open or willing or maybe more naturally inclined to that style of leadership would be just continue constant communication with those you lead, because that feedback is what's going to continue to give you direction in how you're serving them.
Hey, Chi-Chi, it brings up a really interesting point. You know, Brad's obviously a servant leader. He approaches, you know, his people, really just the way he does life from that perspective, obviously informed with a deep sense of belief and purpose. Chi-Chi, do you have any advice for young leaders as they try to identify their leadership style? Maybe it's servant leadership, like Brad's saying, but maybe it's transformational leadership. Maybe it's kind of that democratic leadership. Maybe it's a transactional leadership. I know it's a coaching kind of style. What advice, Chi-Chi, as you hear from Brad, do you have for those young leaders that are one trying to identify their leadership style or trying to choose if they're not like naturally inclined to one over the other?
The thing is, if you're doing something that is not in congruence with who you are, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
The other truth is, in leadership, no one size fits all.
Right.
So my advice is, who are you? How do you lead? Lead authentically and people will follow, right? Mm-hmm. So authentically find where you fit. Having said that, understand how other styles work and when it's needed. Mm-hmm. Because when you flip that pyramid, I love the word you used to, Anthony, I think it was you that used it. You said, instead of reporting to, is leading to.
Or supporting to, reporting.
Or supporting to, right? Mm-hmm. To support to means you need to understand what a person needs to offer that support. So there are times you can have a team and one leads autocratic leadership, as in being directive, because that's where they are. Mm-hmm. You as a leader need to be able to flex to that in the time that is needed. Yes, Anthony, flex. In the time that is needed so that the person can get what they needed. Mm-hmm. One, lead authentically from who you are. Two, understand the other styles and be able to flex when it's needed.
I love this. So, you know, I mean, so my charismatic leadership fails sometimes because I'm not very charismatic, but, and then I'll try to switch over to like a coaching style, you know, so, but it does bring an interesting question. And maybe this is to Brad and Chi-Chi, you can maybe give some really good insight here. Can you, Brad, share a time where you've had, or a specific moment where you've had to adapt your leadership style to a challenge or to a person? Because like, I know, I mean, guys, you both know me and my personality type, right? It works well sometimes. And then a lot of times it's just not the right fit for the right person. And so I have to adapt in my company, right? I work with people of all types of nationalities, ethnicities, mm-hmm. different individual purpose, you know, right? So I have to think about how I don't lead all my people the same way. It's like, what's the golden rule is treat others how you'd like to be treated. And the platinum rule is treating others how they'd like to be treated. So if we're taking that thought, Brad, like, can you describe a time where you've had to either modify or adapt your servant leadership style to fit a challenge or to fit a person?
Sure. Well, I think you're right. Like the comment on the platinum style or the platinum rule, I think that plays into the servant leader, right? The servant leader is being attentive to each individual's style and need and how they receive communication, how they best receive communication, what kind of follow-up they need. So I think that applies to that, to the style of leadership that I subscribe to. But I do, there's times where, you know, I can think of a specific instance recently, and it wasn't an employee, but it was a boardroom discussion with, you know, I think it was, it may have been vendors or banking, financial stuff. But it was essentially where, like, I needed to get everybody on the same page as me to accomplish what we needed to accomplish, and for me to accomplish what I needed to accomplish for our business. And there was probably some adversarial positions in the room. And these were people that after this meeting, like, I wasn't going to be leading them in any direction. You know, they were going to leave my office and everybody go back to their own priorities and own business to attend to. So I think in those places, it does take, it's a mindful switch of, you know, we have a very short window to accomplish a very particular goal and with a very, you know, a particular small group of people, and everybody needs to be on task and on point, and everyone needs to understand, you know, the perspective that I'm trying to get them to understand. So I think that's where, like, the leadership, my leadership of that group in that room to get them all, you know, kind of standing on point with me, is definitely, it feels and looks different, right? Than the typical, you know, servant or shepherd leader. Although I think it's still encompassed in, like, what does the shepherd do, right? Like, he cares for the sheep, but if there's a time when, you know, he's got to pull out his weapon to defend the sheep, or he's got to, you know, maybe defend a couple sheep from a rogue sheep, right? Like there's some potential violence happening there, right? So I think it still all folds in to my version.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. Like, it's not going to just apply the same. They're going to apply the same tools, you know, to the same all the time, to even to the sheep you lead or to the people you lead in your organization.
It might even vary with the same person from time to time?
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah.
Why I think servant leadership is the ultimate form of leadership. Let's use that word servant.
Sure.
A servant is not about themselves. A servant doesn't come to work today and say, this is how what I'm going to do.
Right.
Whoever they're serving, whatever they happen to ask for, they go do it. Mm. They find a way to do it. And this is why also servant leadership is the hardest form of leadership to adapt. Because you have to truly let go of yourself. Mm. You have to truly believe it is not about you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And using the example you just used, Brad, even in a boardroom of equals, even in a situation where you're never going to see those people, but you still have to come together and make a decision. Mm-hmm. What does a servant leader do? Listen. Number one, listen. What are you asking for me? You want me to go get you a cup of water? Okay.
Sure, yeah.
Right? So if you're not listening, you're not hearing. People are constantly telling you what they want, what they need.
Right.
So as a servant, you listen first, you hear, and you level the ground. Many times, people are speaking of the same things, but they're speaking of it from different angles. But when you listen, you can say, hey, stop, let's talk about it. You're saying blue. You're saying sky blue. We're all saying blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when the light hits it, it's different color, right? But it's still the same thing. But you only came to that because you're listening.
Mm-hmm.
So as a servant leader, you listen, you get to what it is, and you provide. And that doesn't mean you're a doormat.
It doesn't mean you're what?
A doormat. That doesn't mean you should wipe your feet on people, you sit there and people let your feet. Because you're listening and you're understanding. You can lead people directly to what they haven't even come to understand themselves that they need.
And don't you think most often because of the culture of leadership in most organizations or the style of leadership, and I get a sense that most people walk into a room assuming they're not on the same page and in a very defensive posture of assume, like, I'm just going to go in there and make sure that I'm my ground is defended. And to your point, Chi-Chi, like, if what you do is you go, like, you immediately make them feel disarmed and comfortable by, like, oh, can I get you a water? Can I, you know, is the temperature comfortable in here for you? You know, things, to your point, you begin to, like, break down that and disarm them from that defensive posture. So now we can have this discussion and now we can get on the same point.
Absolutely. See, if the three of us come together to solve a problem, your solution is not the solution. Neither is mine, neither is Anthony's.
Mm.
But the truth of it is, if we come down and lay all the suppositions down, we come down and we say, here is where I'm coming from and where my challenges are.
Mm-hmm.
The emerging solution that comes out of that is the absolute best solution that could ever come out.
Yep.
But question is, why aren't more of us doing that? Because we have a challenge listening.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I was
interrupting. Everybody wants to be the first talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, think of our current culture and situation on with social media, right? Here's endless platforms where we can talk and say whatever we want, but we don't have to listen to anything that comes back to us. Like it's just completely protected from whatever we don't want to hear.
But listening is the absolute thing that we need to solve our own problem and others.
Simon Sinek talks a lot about listening. And one of the things that I've been trying to do, it doesn't necessarily, because I love to talk. You guys know me well enough that I'd love to tell you what I think first, unfortunately. But one of the hardest things to do as a leader isn't just to sit back and listen, because we all agree that we need to do that. It's to sit back and actively listen without showing our cards on our face. I have a tendency to nod yes to people. Even if you're telling me something that I don't agree with, I'll shake my head like I understand. But sometimes that can come across like I'm acknowledging that what you're saying is true or factual, or I'll shake my head and just because I don't agree just naturally. right? Mm-hmm. And I've actually shaded, I've done two things. One, I've shaded what that person's going to say, right? Because they see my acknowledgement. They're like, oh, he agrees. Let me dive in. Or, oh, he disagrees. So let me be quiet. And I've actually told them while they're speaking, I haven't said a word, but I've told them while they're speaking what I care about. And in doing so, I've told them that, you know, it's about me. So I have to, one of the activities that I'm kind of working on with myself is, well, one, we all know I need to listen more, but two, I need to actively listen in a way that I don't project where I want them to go in in the conversation we're in.
So you bring that a very important point in leadership, communication, right? Brad, you mentioned keep on communicating. Mm-hmm. But what we forget is that majority of the communication is nonverbal.
Right.
Mm. What you do with your face, what you do with your body, your stance, all of that is communicating.
Yeah.
Anthony, you mentioned active listening. Active listening includes what? Acknowledging what they're saying when it needs to be acknowledged, asking for clarification when you need to. But all of this is about putting focus that you understand exactly what they're trying to say. So now, how do you do that? How do you take yourself away from, I have my response, so I'm going to interject? There are simple key things. Taking notes. If you notice, every time I talk to you guys, I'm taking notes. Because one, I don't want to forget what something you said reminded me, so you write it down. See, this allows you to continue to listen. If you don't understand what you said, what they said, or it could be taken many ways, you interject. Not to interrupt you, but can you clarify that so I make sure I'm on the same track with you? You write it down. You see how conversation is going. You're relaxing the person. You're understanding. You're taking your notes. So when you need to retort with what you thought of, you have it without having to interrupt their train of thought.
Right.
And then, Anthony, to what you're saying, being mindful of your body reactions. Me, if I'm thinking something, especially if it's not something I like, it shows on my face.
Me too.
So what did Chichi do? Chichi doodles.
She doodles. You're a doodler. Who's a doodler?
Because, why? That distracts me from making facial reactions, because that will be misconstrued and you may never get a chance to interpret. And you might have nothing whatsoever to do with what they're saying. Just a word they say triggers something else. But you need to be mindful that as the leader, they're watching you, right? And you don't inadvertently lead them down a path that you didn't intend them to go on. So you need to find little tricks like that for yourself.
I was going to say, I think what we have to touch on here, though, Anthony, is that Chichi has a skill neither you or I don't think, have. Because if I was doodling and taking notes, I would completely lose track of what you were saying to me.
You know, guys, shameless plug here for performance scoring. I built a tool. I built a tool that does this. Now, and it does it better every day. We always say it's minimally viable today. It's going to be minimally viable tomorrow, even though it's going to be better. But hold on, let's pivot on this. So
yes, good pivot.
A great pivot time. So because obviously in today's world, technology plays such a massive part of how we keep ourselves and others accountable. Obviously, the goal is to improve our decision making in our organization. Brad, you know, how have you leveraged technology? Just for the public's insight here, Brad, you've been one of our oldest customers. You guys have walked through feedback into reviews. Now we've built a field service management platform that integrates task management and that feedback all together. But how have you leveraged technology? It doesn't have to just be performance scoring, but how have you leveraged it to improve accountability in your organization or to improve decision-making across your teams?
Well, I think to go on the, to help me with the skill set that Chichi has that I don't. AI in meetings, right, is so cool now because we can be recording a meeting, and AI is not just transcribing it, but can be actually sort of bulleting it or outlining the meeting as it unfolds. So that gives me, you know, that gives me the notes that Chi-Chi's making for herself. Like, that gives me my notes without like losing track of the meeting or what's being said. I'm always able to glance over at those or, you know, have them, you know, on the sidebar. So that's been really cool with AI, which is obviously brand new to all of us.
I feel like I need to clarify something.
Yeah, go ahead.
The notes is not necessarily taking notes of everything that is happening.
Right.
The notes is taking notes of impression you had when they're talking.
Sure.
So you don't forget what you wanted to say. Because many times we forget and we latch on to the next thing they said.
Yeah.
But you don't want to interrupt the train of thought so they get there. So you take down that note so you can go back to it and say.
And you're also using it. I mean, we just got done. I made the joke. You're a doodler. You use it to doodle. It's a way for you to kind of project onto something without projecting out from
right.
And that was part of that key thing. And what Brad's saying is that, well, that what's awesome about the tech is that now I can keep those notes because, Brad, you're not a doodler. You know, right? Or
well, no, I think for me, it
nobody's
helps.
Seen your doodles if you do doodle.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They I'm go more of a garbage. Doodler and not a doodler, if that makes sense.
That, I think for me, what I do take from that AI, though, that's helpful is I will, you know, so I'll think of something like Chi-Chi said, like, this is important. I need to let the speaker finish speaking. But I definitely need to we need to revisit this, or I have some input I want to add to this. And I will those constant kind of scrolling AI of the meeting allow me to like kind of quickly, like when the speaker's wrapping up, I'm the one that's like kind of scrolling back through the last like few minutes of data of notes. And then like, okay, that's what I'm jumping on next. Cause I'll get to that point where I'm like, you know, I mean, we all probably do it in just regular communication. It's like, I had something important to say. So that's where the technology helps me, but I will practice the noting and doodling that I've seen Chi-Chi, cause I had no idea Chi-Chi was noting and doodling this whole podcast. Like, and she's just been getting after it.
Hey, you start noodling by doodling. Okay.
Now, but hold on. While we're on that AI thing, here's another thing that we as leaders miss. Follow up and follow through.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And this is why the AI note-taking is very, very important, especially the categorizing that it does. And you can put the actions and things. And it helps you follow through.
Oh, it's
we
massive.
Said we're going to do this. Who said that? Who are we assigning it to? So you follow through and make sure it comes and bring it back. And if it's an ongoing meeting, bring it back and put a closure to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even understand what you're doing when you do that.
Is this a commercial for performance scoring? Because I feel like it is. I feel like we're starting to do the commercial part. Guys, hey, no, this is sponsored by... I'm just kidding.
No, because people like when things are followed through. What is the biggest problem with engagement, right? You do this engagement survey, you ask people to give their feedbacks. They give the feedbacks, nothing happens. So by the third year, you ask them to give feedback. They're like, why? I don't like wasting my time.
Yeah. No, so, I think it's been massively valuable for me to hold meetings. And it not be one of those, we used to have those days, like before this technology, like before I had what performance scoring has given us you had those days where you were, if someone said like, how was your day? It was a productive day. And you'd be like, no, it wasn't. I sat in meetings half the day, but like the purpose, the meetings had a purpose, right? So now it's like these meetings, first of all, they're shorter, they're more succinct. And then in the end, to your point, Chi-Chi, like there's follow-up, like there's real tasks and action items that are sent out that automatically like are come with accountability trailers and like who's going to, and then, you know, I mean, it's just, yeah, the technology part of it has made it awesome.
Commercial for now. Sure. It is official commercial. We're taking this out.
All right. Well, we'll just leave the name out of the rest of the discussion.
Well, hey, Brad, so. What are some of the challenges? Like, okay, so, and maybe maybe a good point here is you started with performance scoring really just around the concept of feedback, being able to provide that feedback in the moment to the right people that needed the information right now and only that information. Can you talk a little bit about, and maybe Chi-Chi, if you want to jump in either before Brad or during or after, just about how important it is for a leader to give feedback in the moment before it's too late, before the train's left the station.
You want me to start or?
I'd like to see your lived experience.
Okay. So to go back in history a ways, we started with the concept that Anthony helped me with in the beginning stages of performance scoring to give feedback to, and at the time it was staff that were in the field. So they were, more than an arm's length away, right? You couldn't instantly communicate easily. You couldn't instantly be aware of a mistake they made. You were aware of it, after that mistake created the problem it created and would get back to the office. Right. So it was about, trying to develop more consistent and faster feedback as close to real time as possible to create a behavior modification to literally, like, we have guys that are consistently making the same mistakes in the field, no matter how many times we talk about it, no matter how many times we bring it up in meetings, once a week or whatever. It's like, man, we keep doing this over and over again. And it wasn't that we had bad people or simple people. We just, it was a lot of little steps that needed to be tweaked, or we needed to stop doing this and start doing that. So it was creating that system to be able to give those people as close to, instant feedback. Like when the behavior occurred, we want to give them feedback as close as we can in time to when that behavior occurred that we don't want to occur again. So that they were mindful of it. And then it was consistent as well, even positive feedback for that same behavior, so that when they did it the right way, again, they would see that positive feedback. So it was like the consistent and the reoccurring and the consistent feedback that we were able to do through that technology would literally, we could change small behaviors in a large group of, say, 20 to 30 people in a matter of like weeks, a couple weeks. And that would normally be a massive, long undertaking, right? With a lot of disciplinary action that honestly, like people maybe losing time or having to have disciplinary meetings or discussions that, are never, are always difficult in that and make the culture a little bit, a little bit rough. So it's been huge in that way. That's where it's kind of started. I don't know if that is a good platform, Chi-Chi, to jump
actually
off
is
on.
It is. This is what I tell people all the time. Feedback is a gift that you give, right? We tend to take feedback as negative or positive. It's really not negative or positive. What makes it negative or positive is what you do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're supposed to go left and you went right. And right there, I tell you, stop. You need to go right. And you're correct. Right? You allow this person to learn. Now, to your point and what technology helps, if you waited, they would have gone left and wasted hours or days. Mm-hmm. And then you come back, like, you see, at this point, you had to go right. How many times am I going to tell you before you do it?
Yeah.
And you've created this barrier to that person. They, when people are fussed at, they're cringed. There's a self-protection that is happening. And many a time, most of the things you said is not heard. So that instant correction helps. But from the person giving the feedback, you need to realize it's a gift that you're giving. It's not a correction. Mm. Here's a true story that happened to me. In college, I did a research. And when I did my research write-up, it was wrong. I submitted it. The professor never told me it was wrong. The next semester, an advisor recommended me for the same research. And he said no. The advisor said, did you, why? She said, well, she didn't do the report right. Did you tell her? Well, I didn't know how to tell her. So advisor told me all of this. I found out a way to how to do the report right. And I went to his office. I said, I'm very disappointed in you. Mind you, I'm 19 years old when this is happening. I said, I paid money to come to this school to learn from you. And your responsibility, which is the responsibility of a leader, is to correct somebody that is going wrong. From him not correcting me, he did me a disservice.
Sure.
I didn't learn something I could have learned a lot earlier.
Sure.
And this is how we as leaders need to look at it. And he was looking at me. He didn't know how to tell me because I was a black student and he was a white teacher. I'm like, hey, student teacher has no color. I paid money. You took it. And this is how we as leaders, we need to really look at things simplistic.
Absolutely.
Take away all these biases we have. This person is in this position, needs to do this thing right now. The feedback is needed for them to grow and get to where they need to be.
And that feedback is a loop, right? Like it's, yes. There's a loop. And that's where I think, you know, Brad, you know, in what you were, I think, alluding to when you were talking about it, but you know, you're not, it's not just you went right, go left. There's a loop that happens because now you get to understand why they went left. Because people, when they make a mistake.
With the technology, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, but it is natural, right? When people make a mistake, and I just made the mistake. So I actually know why I made the mistake. Because if you're telling me, you know, I should have gone right instead of going left, I can tell you why I thought I should have gone left, which will actually help this whole conversation happen. It'll tell you, the person who knows that I should have gone right, why I went left. And it'll help me express and understand why I went left. Like, oh, I should have gone right. Well, that's actually why I should have gone right. Right. And so I think the feedback, the data, the performance data and the feedback loops obviously are game changers for leaders. So how do you use that data to inform your leadership decisions, Brad? Or how do you let that data inform the leadership decisions of your people, of your because I know a little bit about your business, you know, dispatch and the operational center of your business is really your logistics operation, right? So how are you using these feedback loops to inform your decision making in that neural center, which is your dispatch operations?
Well, I think like you said, it's a loop, right? So and then what Chi-Chi said is like feedback is feedback. It doesn't have to be a positive or negative. It's just sure. it's understanding. It's feedback. So. So what we'll see is we'll see a group of people who are in, and we do have the majority of our staff is our field in the field. And I say in the field, meaning they're not in the office, they're out driving around in vehicles. We'll from that feedback loop, we begin to understand, even if it's not spoken, like even if somebody doesn't call the office and go, this is why I keep turning left. We begin to understand just from the volume of feedback from you know across the board. So you know across 20 to 30 employees, like we begin to understand and be able to draw conclusions about maybe why so many of them are turning left. Is there a bridge out on the right turn that we don't know about? Right. We begin to be able to ask questions. You know, as opposed to just why does just keeps happening because people are foolish. Well, like look at the feedback. This isn't one or two people that just don't listen or are absent-minded. Like we have a much bigger movement happening here. So we're able to look at that feedback from coming in, you know, the inbound feedback, right, from the field into us in the same way. And determine some things. If nothing else, we're determining questions to ask that we don't have answers to, right? So yeah, our team gets to like use that to kind of almost come up with the game plan. Like, what do we need to do next?
And I think in our last 5 or 6 minutes here, because it really does bring us in. And Dr. Chi-Chi, I think, well, one, I want to give you space to, I saw you start to doodle. You were doodling, okay?
Well, now you're looking for it. See, now you're watching.
I'm looking. I am like, I'm zoned in, man.
No, I did have something. I mean, the important thing is the question you asked Brad earlier. How does this feed decision-making, right? Now, Brad made a very important point of seeing that the same people are doing the same thing makes you ask the question, what? Why? Yeah. Is there a deviation in what we thought the path should be? What does that lead to? Process improvement, right? Yeah. If there is, you come to that junction, you can't make a left or it's too sharp a left, then you move to somewhere else where they turn to, right? See how that has improved your decision-making. And the data now also helps you build trust with your employees. They know that you're not looking at them, they're stupid, or they're looking at them punitively, like, why you keep making the same mistake? That you're looking at it holistically. Okay, what environmental challenges is happening? What decision? Do you have enough time to process what you're doing before you do it? So it's building trust, and they're now able to communicate back to you quicker. Or did you see this? Yeah, I know I was supposed to turn left here, but I couldn't, or it's too sharp. If I did, it would have caused an accident. Right. So it improves decision-making, improves trust on both ways.
Dr. Chi-Chi, that brings up like a really good pivot point on this, right? Because we've got feedback. We've got the feedback loop, right? And we know, and we've got a good leader in Brad. He's a servant leader, right? We know great leadership is built on strong teams, right? We all acknowledge that. So how do you foster that culture, that team culture of accountability, while still empowering your team to take ownership through feedback and the rest? So like, how can we take all of this great feedback, this great leadership style, and then use that to help foster that sense of group accountability? And I know we built a tool to help do that too, but in your way, Brad, or in like from your perspective, how do you foster that culture of accountability?
Well, I think we have certain categories, and you know this, Anthony, just because you know our system, but we have certain categories that are public, meaning the feedback is viewable by the public, like from everyone in our company can see the feedback, right? And then we have certain categories of feedback that are private between the manager and the person that's underneath that manager. Certainly, we have the certain categories where we don't want someone to feel ostracized or that they're being, you know, made an example of. But for most of the general categories that are just like, hey, we're humans, and as humans, we're going to make these kind of mistakes if we're not, if we're not intentional about them. Those will be public feedback. And then everyone begins to help one another. It creates a team, a culture, and a team unity where, we're seeing where certain people are struggling, and maybe those people that the rest of the team sees like, oh, we were close to having, you know, our highest score of the month, but this handful of people, like, they need help, right? And so, and again, these are categories where it's not like somebody just does something really stupid and it costs the company a lot of money. These would be categories where it's like, you know, hey, if we do these, if we don't forget to do these things, like, you know, we have a better score with our customers, and that better score, you know, it's almost a game we're playing as a company. So I think the public ability to see it, and to see where we're improving as a group and where we're struggling as a group. And then that also fosters like more feedback from the group, right? Because if the group is like, hey, this keeps happening over here, then and everybody's aware of it together, then we start hearing from the group, you know, we start hearing from the, you know, the whatever group that's having these issues, and they're like, hey, this is like Chi-Chi said, like, we can't turn left there. It's too sharp. Like, it doesn't work. So I think that's really been a big way we've created a culture of accountability. And it's not a negative back, you know, like Chi-Chi said, it doesn't have to be negative or positive. That's just, that's how we seem to take it. But it really disseminates that feel of negative and kind of replaces it with like, hey, we're in this together. How do we fix this?
There's one key thing you said there. Having a shared goal also builds this collaborative space, right?
Oh, yeah.
If all of us fell together or went together, if I'm the weakest link, what are the two of you going to do? No, let's help her. Let's show her how it's done. So we as a group don't win. So you see how you're starting to create that environment where people help. And which one is going to be more impactful? That your colleague is helping you in the moment. Somebody that is going through what you're going through saying, no, don't do that. This is what's going to happen. Do it this way. As opposed to your manager having to tell you, why did you do that? No matter how nice your manager is, it still comes up as a reporting.
Right.
I think that's just a brilliant thought. I mean, leader, there is the role of management, and then there is the place of leadership. And leadership is something that can be diffused among an entire group of people.
Exactly.
And if you're keeping your people in a great feedback loop that's promoting a culture of accountability, then that understanding of like how I can help you, because that's an area that I either understand or I've shown success, an area or the inverse of that is there, then that it's a bridge, right? It's a bridge into future success. Well, guys, just as we land the plane here, one of the questions, this is our first episode for our viewers. We want to have some common things that we land on at the end of every episode. And one of those is, as we bring on these great leaders like Mr. Brad Curtis here, we want to ask them, what's a common mistake that you see leaders make today that could be avoided? And along that same thought, if you could go back and tell your younger self one piece of leadership advice, what would it be? So first question is, what's a common mistake you see leaders make today that you think could be avoided? And then if you could go back and tell your younger self one thing, one piece of leadership advice, what would it be?
I think the common mistake, and I mean, this is just something that that probably happened Friday. So it happens a lot. Yeah. Is that as leaders, if we're not careful, we assume that the way we see and understand something, we assume that that's how our subject or those, you know, those or the person we're leading sees it and understands it. So then what happens is it creates frustration in the leader, right? So the manager or the leader is just like, you know, if it's black and white, why would he have done this? That's just such a bad decision, right? It creates frustration. And instead of it being a default, like to the understanding, like, hey, you don't know, and this is a fault of the leader, not the one being led, that, hey, manager, you shouldn't assume that the person that you're managing and leading sees it and understands it the way you see it and understand it. That's your job, manager, to make sure that when you task something to, when you give someone a task or when you give someone a project, like that's your job to make sure that they see and understand it the way that you need them to see and understand it to reach that goal. So that one, that one I see very like consistently where people, they jump to frustration. And it's like, wait, you're only frustrated because you assume he sees it and saw it exactly how you see it and saw it. And so therefore you think this just must be a stupid decision, you know, a foolish decision made by this person rather than, no, they're seeing it from a different perspective. And they made the best decision they thought they knew to make based on how they saw it. So I think that, I don't know if you want to pause after that before we jump to the next question, but that's the most common, thing I seem to deal with.
It's not just leadership. Assuming, you can't assume, right? My worldview and your worldview is different. One word can trigger something completely different. So this is why it's always, can you repeat back to me what you heard? What am I asking you to do? right? Oh, no, not that. Because even when you're talking about it, because you know all the different parts, you have all the information. So you assume the person on the other end have all the information. By right. giving them room or asking them to repeat what you heard, you can fill in the gaps that they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So it also builds trust, right? I need to hear, so I make sure you have everything you need. And at any point, if there is a question, do not hesitate to stop and come and ask me, because it's easy to get it right than to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how so much of the things we talk about in leadership, really, they really, you can use a broad brush and they apply just like to relationships, right? Like human relationships across the board, mm-hmm. you know, whether you're at work or whether it's your marriage, your kids, your friends, whatever.
Totally.
Yep.
Well, so Brad,
there's the other question though.
Yeah, there's still
the other question. What was the other? Oh, my younger self.
Advice
what would
to
I,
your younger self. Yes.
Yeah.
It would probably be like, get out of your own way. It's not about you. You're not the point.
that piece of advice will be said over and over and over. I was, you know, it's
for like, generations and generations. Right?
Well, and I think that's my advice for me too, you know, me too. And it's, I think it goes back to that whole golden rule, platinum rule, or even the assumptions thing that we were doing. What do assumptions make an ass out of you and me? Right. Mm-hmm. So
you say it makes the first three letters out of you.
Okay. But we'll have to get that in post.
Keep it clean.
We're going to have to get that in post. Well, with that, guys, you know, that wraps up our very first episode of Between the Ones and the Zeros. So a huge thanks to our first guest, Brad Curtis, for sharing their insights. And
thanks for having me.
And leadership. Yeah. And how technology is shaping the way we lead and build teams today. And, of course, an even bigger thing. Yeah, well, just a big thank you. Same big thank you to my co-host, Dr. Chi-Chi, for bringing her incredible perspective to the conversation. And so, guys, here on Between the Zeros and Ones, we're all about exploring the real stories, strategies, and tools that help leaders lead better, whether that's through data-driven accountability, leadership science, or the practical tools we put in place to make it happen. If you've got value out of today's conversation, we'd love to for you to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a fellow leader or business owner who's looking to grow. And if you're curious about how technology can support your leadership and your team, your team accountability, check us out further. And we'd love to get back with you. If you're interested in coming on to podcast guest with us, we'd love to interview you. But until next time, keep leading with purpose. And we'll see you on the next episode of Between the Zeros and Ones. Thank you.
And remember, it's all about people.
First. Thanks, guys.